Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present St. Vincent and the Grenadines, A Journey Through Time, Episode 1, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 1, The Arrival of the Caribs. The wind howled gently over the azure waters of the Caribbean Sea, carrying with it the whispers of an ancient journey. Waves lapped at the rugged shores of St. Vincent, a land untouched by time, where the dense rainforest stretched endlessly, cloaking the hills in emerald majesty. This was no ordinary land. This was a sanctuary, a cradle of life that would become home to a people who navigated the vast ocean with nothing but the stars as their guide. The journey of the Caribs. It began thousands of miles away, in the heart of South America, where the Arawaks, a peaceful and skilled agricultural society, thrived along the banks of the Orinoco River. For centuries, they cultivated cassava and maize, fished the rivers, and built canoes that seemed to defy the limits of their simple tools. But the arrival of a new force, the warlike Caribs, set history on an unexpected course. The Caribs were a people forged by the demands of survival and the mastery of the sea. They were fierce warriors and master navigators, their sleek, dugout canoes capable of gliding over the waves at incredible speeds. Driven by a desire for expansion, or perhaps the simple pull of the horizon, they ventured northward. As they traveled, they clashed with the Arawaks, absorbing their knowledge and territory until they reached the necklace of islands we now call the Lesser Antilles. By the time their canoes cut through the turquoise waters and beached on St. Vincent's shores, the Caribs had transformed. No longer just settlers, they were the rulers of these lands. They called it Heruna, meaning Land of the Blessed. To them, this island was a gift, a place where the spirits of their ancestors whispered through the rustling palm fronds and the roar of the waterfalls cascading from volcanic cliffs. The land they claimed, St. Vincent, was unlike any place they had seen before. The volcanic soil was rich and fertile, perfect for growing cassava and sweet potatoes. Rivers snaked through valleys, teeming with fish, while the dense forests provided shelter and an endless bounty of fruit and wildlife. The island's peaks offered views of the horizon, a natural lookout for any threats that might come from the sea. The Caribs quickly adapted to the land, planting crops in the flat, arable spaces near the coast while hunting in the forested interior. They lived in villages that dotted the shoreline, each marked by communal canae, thatched houses, where families gathered to share food and stories. Their society was deeply communal, governed by a chieftain known as the Abutu, who made decisions in consultation with elders and warriors. Every aspect of their life was tied to the land, the sea, and the sky above. Life and beliefs. To the Caribs, every element of nature was sacred. The sea was not just a source of food, it was a lifeline, a god in its own right. The forests were alive with spirits, and the mountains were the dwelling places of their ancestors. Their rituals, often held under the light of the full moon, celebrated these connections. They danced, painted their bodies in vibrant colors, and offered cassava bread and tobacco to the spirits, asking for protection and prosperity. Their spiritual leaders, the boys, served as healers and intermediaries with the divine. Using herbs, chants, and rituals, the boys guided the Caribs through sickness, conflict, and even natural disasters. To outsiders, these practices might have seemed mysterious, but to the Caribs, they were a vital link between the physical and spiritual worlds. Conflict and adaptation. Despite their reverence for the land, the Caribs were a people of war. Their expansion into St. Vincent was not without conflict. They carried with them weapons crafted from hardwood and stone, clubs, bows, and arrows tipped with poison extracted from plants. Warfare was as much a part of their identity as fishing or farming. It wasn't merely about territory. It was about honor, survival, and the preservation of their way of life. Over time, their interactions with the Arawaks softened. While the Caribs initially dominated through force, they began to assimilate aspects of Arawak culture. Marriages between the two groups created a blended heritage, and the Arawak language persisted alongside the Caribs' own, setting the stage for history. As the sun dipped below the horizon, casting its golden light over the waves, the Caribs stood as masters of their domain. But the winds of change were beginning to stir. Unknown to them, far across the Atlantic Ocean, European powers were preparing to set sail. Their arrival would bring a clash of worlds, one that would forever alter the fate of St. Vincent and its people. For now, the Caribs thrived in their land of the blessed, unaware that their resilience and spirit would soon be tested like never before. And so, St. Vincent's story begins, with a people who carved out their lives on its shores, who lived and died by the rhythm of the waves, and who, even in the face of great change, would leave their mark on this land forever. Chapter 2: Encounters with the Europeans. The year was 1498. The morning sun rose over the sparkling Caribbean Sea, its rays glinting off the cresting waves that carried an ominous visitor. Far in the distance, the silhouette of strange sails appeared on the horizon, foreign, unfamiliar, and brimming with silent intent. For the first time, the shores of St. Vincent were about to meet the ambitions of the Old World. A fateful arrival. When Christopher Columbus's ship swept through the Caribbean on his third voyage, the crew likely gazed upon St. Vincent's lush, rugged landscape with awe. Yet they did not land, for the island presented a formidable challenge. Its rocky cliffs and dense forests concealed the fierce Carib warriors who called this land home. Unlike other islands where the Arawaks had offered relative peace, St. Vincent was already known among explorers as a place of resistance, a land where the Caribs fiercely defended their sovereignty. The Spanish chroniclers referred to the Caribs as savages, but this label was born of fear more than truth. The Caribs were proud and fiercely independent, and they would meet any foreigner with defiance rather than submission. Thus, while Columbus claimed many islands in the name of Spain, St. Vincent remained untamed, standing like a fortress against European colonization. The advent of European curiosity. Though the Spanish largely bypassed St. Vincent, the island did not escape the gaze of Europe. The French and British, vying for dominance in the New World, recognized the island's strategic importance. Situated between major sea routes, St. Vincent was a jewel waiting to be plucked, a key that could unlock trade routes and military advantage. The first real encounters between Europeans and the Caribs were not grand landings or battles, but hesitant exchanges at sea. European sailors traded beads, mirrors, and other trinkets for food and local goods. These fleeting moments were charged with suspicion and misunderstanding. The Caribs saw the foreigners as potential threats, while the Europeans viewed the Caribs as obstacles to conquest. Clash of cultures. The Caribs, with their painted bodies and fierce expressions, were a sight to behold. They wielded bows and arrows tipped with poison, and their knowledge of the land made them formidable adversaries. To the Europeans, their customs seemed strange, even frightening. Stories of Carib warriors consuming the flesh of their enemies, a ritual meant to absorb the strength of their foes, spread like wildfire across European courts. Whether exaggerated or misunderstood, these tales fueled the image of the Caribs as fierce, untamable cannibals. But this was not merely a clash of weapons, it was a clash of worldviews. The Caribs saw the land as sacred, something to be protected and shared among their people. The Europeans, driven by a hunger for wealth and power, saw the land as a resource to be exploited and claimed. The shadow of colonization. By the early 1600s, the French and British began making tentative moves to establish a foothold on St. Vincent. While neither power immediately succeeded in colonizing the island, their presence grew like an unwelcome shadow. They brought with them not only their ambitions, but also the seeds of destruction, disease, which swept through the Carib population like an invisible plague. Smallpox and influenza, diseases to which the Caribs had no immunity, decimated entire villages. The Caribs, who had weathered centuries of challenges, now faced an invisible enemy. Their numbers dwindled, and their society was thrown into disarray. Yet even in the face of such devastation, their spirit of resistance remained unbroken. Early alliances and betrayals. In a bid to strengthen their position, the Caribs occasionally formed alliances with the Europeans. These were fragile arrangements, often born of necessity rather than trust. The French, in particular, established trade relationships with the Caribs, exchanging goods for access to the island's resources. But these alliances were fraught with betrayal. The Europeans' true intent was never hidden for long. French traders and British sailors brought weapons and alcohol, knowing these would sow division and dependency among the Caribs. The introduction of muskets shifted the balance of power within the region, as some Carib leaders sought to outmaneuver rivals with European firepower. The rising tension. By the mid-1600s, tension between the Caribs and the Europeans reached a boiling point. British settlers, backed by their government's expansionist policies, began encroaching on Carib lands. They cut down forests to plant tobacco and sugarcane, claiming the fertile soil as their own. To the Caribs, this was not just an attack on their land, but an attack on their very existence. Skirmishes erupted along the coasts, with Carib warriors ambushing European settlers who dared to venture too far inland. The forests of St. Vincent became a battlefield, where the Caribs used their intimate knowledge of the terrain to gain the upper hand. But the Europeans, with their advanced weaponry and unrelenting determination, were an enemy unlike any the Caribs had faced before. The stage is set. As the 17th century came to a close, St. Vincent stood at a crossroads. The Caribs had held their ground against the might of European empires, but the cost was great. Their numbers were reduced, their lands were under threat, and their way of life hung in the balance. For the Europeans, the island remained a prize worth fighting for. Its fertile soil and strategic location made it a key asset in the race for colonial dominance. The stage was set for a struggle that would define the future of St. Vincent, a struggle that would pit the resilience of the Caribs against the relentless ambition of the Old World. The winds of change were blowing stronger now, carrying with them the echoes of war, survival, and transformation. St. Vincent, once untouched and unclaimed, was about to become the center of a conflict that would shape its destiny forever. Chapter 3. The Black Caribs and the Transatlantic Slave Trade. It was a humid afternoon in the early 1600s when the first ship sailed close to the shores of St. Vincent, its blackened hull looming over the turquoise waters. On board were not explorers or settlers but shackled souls, a cargo of African men and women, stolen from their homelands and sold into the merciless machinery of the transatlantic slave trade. Unbeknownst to them, this was the beginning of a tragic yet remarkable chapter in history, where pain and resilience would give birth to a new people, the Garifuna. 1. The arrival of Africans in the Caribbean. The transatlantic slave trade was a monstrous system that spanned centuries, uprooting millions of Africans from their homes and scattering them across the Americas. St. Vincent, though not a primary destination for the trade, became a key waypoint in this horrific enterprise due to its geographic location. European ships, laden with human cargo, passed by the island's jagged coastlines on their way to larger colonies. Shipwrecks were common in the treacherous waters of the Lesser Antilles, and it was through these accidents of fate that many Africans first came to St. Vincent. Survivors of these shipwrecks swam ashore, bringing with them their languages, traditions, and unbreakable will to survive. 2. The birth of the Black Caribs. The Caribs, known for their fiercely independent spirit, initially viewed the Africans with caution. However, these two groups found common ground in their shared resistance to European domination. Over time, the Africans were integrated into Carib society, their cultures blending to create a new and unique identity. This merging of African and Carib traditions gave rise to the Black Caribs, or Garifuna people. They spoke a language rooted in both Carib and African dialects, practiced spiritual rituals that honored both their heritages, and lived by a communal ethos that emphasized resilience and unity. The Garifuna were not merely a hybrid people. They were a testament to the power of survival and adaptation. They took the fragments of their shattered histories and wove them into a culture that was vibrant, rich, and defiant in the face of oppression. 3. Life as a Black Carib, a day in the village. To truly understand the Black Caribs, one must step into their world. Imagine a coastal village at sunrise, where the air is filled with the scent of salt and the smoke of cooking fires. Men prepare their canoes for a day of fishing, their muscles taut from years of paddling against the tides. Women weave baskets and prepare cassava, their laughter ringing out as children play along the shore. The Garifuna people lived in harmony with the land and sea, their daily lives a blend of work, spirituality, and communal joy. Music and dance were central to their culture, with drums beating out rhythms that echoed the heartbeat of their ancestors. Rituals, often held at night, celebrated life, mourned the dead, and sought the guidance of spirits. But life was not without its challenges. The threat of European encroachment loomed large, and the Garifuna were constantly preparing for the next battle, whether with the elements or with foreign invaders. 4. European threats and the struggle for survival. By the late 1600s, the Black Caribs had become a formidable force in St. Vincent. They were known for their exceptional warriors, who combined Carib knowledge of the land with African tactics of resistance. This made them a significant obstacle to European powers, who saw the Garifuna as both a nuisance and a threat to their colonial ambitions. The French and British often attempted to establish footholds on the island, but the Black Caribs met them with unrelenting resistance. Stories of their bravery spread throughout the Caribbean, inspiring other enslaved and indigenous peoples to fight back against their oppressors. One such story tells of a Garifuna warrior who, armed only with a spear, stood against a battalion of British soldiers. Though outnumbered, he used the dense jungle to his advantage, leading the soldiers into traps and ambushes. His courage became a symbol of the Garifuna's unyielding spirit. 5. Cultural synthesis and the creation of Garifuna identity. The blending of African and Carib cultures was not without its tensions. Early on, there were misunderstandings and conflicts as these two groups learned to coexist. However, necessity forged bonds that transcended their differences. Together, they developed a shared identity rooted in resistance and resilience. Garifuna spirituality was one of the most profound expressions of this synthesis. It combined African ancestral worship with Carib animism, creating a rich tapestry of beliefs that honored the spirits of the land, sea, and sky. Rituals were performed to mark births, deaths, and significant life events, and music was a constant presence, connecting the people to their ancestors and each other. This unique identity was also reflected in their art, food, and language. The Garifuna developed a cuisine that blended African and Carib ingredients and techniques, creating dishes that were as nourishing as they were flavorful. Their language, a creole of African, Carib, and European influences, became a powerful symbol of their unity and resilience. 6. The role of women in Garifuna society. Women played a crucial role in Garifuna society. They were the keepers of tradition, passing down stories, songs, and rituals to the next generation. They were also healers, using their knowledge of herbs and plants to treat illnesses and injuries. In times of conflict, women were not mere bystanders. They supported the warriors by providing food, tending to the wounded, and even fighting alongside the men when necessary. Their strength and resilience were central to the survival of the Garifuna people. 7. A legacy of resistance. The Black Caribs' resistance to European colonization is one of the most remarkable stories in the history of the Caribbean. They fought not just for their land, but for their right to exist as a free and independent people. Their legacy is one of defiance, resilience, and an unbreakable connection to their heritage. Though their battles were often bloody and their losses great, the Garifuna never wavered in their determination to protect their culture and their way of life. This spirit of resistance would be tested in the centuries to come, as the island of St. Vincent became a battleground for European powers and the Garifuna found themselves caught in the crossfire. Conclusion: Seeds of the Future. As the chapter closes, the stage is set for the next era in St. Vincent's history. The Black Caribs, forged in the crucible of slavery and resistance, would become a symbol of hope and resilience for oppressed peoples across the Caribbean and beyond. Their story is a reminder that even in the darkest of times, the human spirit can endure and thrive. Chapter 4: The Wars of Resistance. The year was 1763. The morning dew clung to the dense rainforest of St. Vincent, and the distant sound of conch shells echoed through the hills. These were not the sounds of peace, but calls to arms. The Caribs, indigenous warriors, and their African Garifuna allies prepared for battle against an enemy they had fought for decades. The British, relentless in their ambition to colonize the island, were determined to crush the last vestiges of resistance. Yet the Caribs, led by their indomitable leader Joseph Chatoier, refused to surrender their land without a fight. 1. A prelude to war, the First Carib War, 1769-1773. The rising tensions. The First Carib War did not erupt overnight. For years, tensions simmered between the British settlers and the Caribs. After the Treaty of Paris in 1763 ceded St. Vincent to Britain, the colonial government began distributing land to European settlers, disregarding the Caribs' ancestral claims. The British viewed the island as fertile ground for sugar plantations, while the Caribs saw it as sacred territory passed down through generations. The encroachment on their lands was not just a political issue, but a spiritual affront, sparking outrage among the Carib and Garifuna communities. The role of Joseph Chatoweer. Joseph Chatoweer, a charismatic and strategic leader, emerged as the face of resistance. Born of mixed Carib and African descent, he embodied the unity between the indigenous people and the African survivors who had joined their ranks. Chatoweer understood the land intimately, using the island's dense forests, hidden valleys, and rocky cliffs to plan his defensive strategies. Chatoweer's leadership style was deeply rooted in the Carib ethos of communal decision-making. He consulted with elders, warriors, and spiritual leaders, ensuring that every decision reflected the will of the people. His presence inspired not just loyalty, but a fierce determination to protect their homeland. The outbreak of hostilities. The war began in earnest when British settlers attempted to claim the fertile lands in the northern part of the island, areas that the Caribs had farmed and defended for centuries. The settlers underestimated the Caribs' resolve and were met with ambushes, poisoned arrows, and guerrilla tactics that left their ranks decimated. The Caribs' mastery of the terrain gave them a significant advantage. They used the forests as both shield and weapon, setting traps, launching surprise attacks, and disappearing into the foliage before the British could retaliate. These tactics frustrated the British, who were unaccustomed to such unconventional warfare. 2. The First Carib War: Key Battles and Turning Points. The Battle of Dorsetshire Hill. One of the pivotal moments of the First Carib War occurred at Dorsetshire Hill, where British troops attempted to establish a fortified position. The Caribs, led by Chatoweer, launched a surprise night attack, exploiting their knowledge of the terrain and the element of surprise. The battle was brutal, with the Caribs using their traditional weapons alongside muskets obtained through trade and skirmishes. Though outnumbered and outgunned, the Caribs inflicted significant losses on the British forces, forcing them to retreat. This victory boosted Carib morale and demonstrated that the British were not invincible. The role of the Garifuna women. Behind the warriors stood the Garifuna women, who played a crucial role in the war effort. They provided logistical support, tending to the wounded, preparing food, and maintaining the villages while the men were at war. In some cases, women joined the fight, wielding weapons and defending their homes with unmatched ferocity. The British response. Frustrated by their inability to subdue the Caribs, the British resorted to scorched earth tactics, burning villages, destroying crops, and targeting the Caribs' food supply. These actions caused widespread suffering, but only deepened the Caribs' resolve. The forests became their sanctuary, a place where they could regroup, plan, and launch new offensives. 3. The Second Carib War, 1795-1797, a deadlier conflict. Renewed British aggression. The uneasy truce that followed the First Carib War lasted less than 2 decades. By the 1790s, the British, emboldened by their growing military power, sought to finally subjugate the Caribs. The Second Carib War was not just a continuation of the previous conflict, but a larger and more devastating struggle. Alliances and betrayals. During this period, the Caribs sought alliances with external powers to strengthen their resistance. The French, who were eager to undermine British colonial ambitions, provided limited support in the form of weapons and advisors. However, these alliances were fragile and often undermined by competing interests. The Siege of Vigy. One of the most dramatic episodes of the Second Carib War was the Siege of Vigy, where Carib forces held a fortified position against relentless British attacks. For weeks, they withstood bombardment and starvation, their determination unshaken even as their numbers dwindled. The siege became a symbol of Carib resistance, with stories of heroism and sacrifice passing into legend. Warriors fought to their last breath, knowing that their stand would be remembered as a testament to their people's bravery. 4. The Death of Chatoweer and the Fall of the Carib Resistance. The Final Stand. In 1795, Joseph Chatoweer was killed in battle during an ambush at Dorsetshire Hill. His death marked a turning point in the war, as the Caribs lost not only their leader, but also the unifying force behind their resistance. Despite this devastating blow, the Caribs continued to fight, driven by the memory of their fallen leader. The British victory. By 1797, the British had gained the upper hand. Their superior numbers, advanced weaponry, and unrelenting campaign eventually overwhelmed the Carib forces. Those who survived were captured, killed, or exiled to the distant island of Roten off the coast of Honduras. The exile of the Garifuna marked the end of organized resistance on St. Vincent. Yet, even in defeat, the spirit of the Caribs endured. The Garifuna carried their culture, traditions, and stories to new lands, ensuring that their legacy would never be forgotten. 5. The legacy of the Carib Wars. The Carib Wars were not merely conflicts over land, but battles for identity, sovereignty, and survival. They represent one of the most significant episodes of resistance against European colonization in the Caribbean. The bravery of the Caribs and the sacrifices of leaders like Joseph Chedoir continue to inspire generations, serving as a powerful reminder of the cost of freedom. Conclusion: the echoes of resistance. As the sun sets over the hills of St. Vincent, the whispers of the past can still be heard in the rustling leaves and the crashing waves. The story of the Carib Wars is not just a tale of loss, but a testament to the unyielding spirit of a people who refused to be erased. Their fight, their sacrifices, and their legacy remain etched into the soul of the island, a reminder that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.